Hello and welcome back. My name is Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Megillah. This series of recordings is a project of the OU Department of Synagogue Services, OU Torah, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. We are on Daf Yud Bet Amud Aleph, that's 12a, and we are on the third wide line, about a quarter of the way down the page, the last word on the line. The Gemara is darshaning. It's taking the verses of the Megillah and explaining them verse by verse. We are actually in the middle of Pasuk Gimel, which reads, Bishnat Shalosh Lamalcho, in the third year of Achashverosh's reign, Asa Mishta, he made a party, L'chol Sarav Avadav, for all of his princes and servants, Chel Parasu Madai, the soldiers, the military of Persia and Media, Hapartamim, the royalty, Visareham Dinot Lefanav, and the cabinet members, the aristocracy that were before him. So, The words that we're explaining right now are Chel Paras Umadai Hapartamim, the military of Persia and Media, the aristocracy. Uchtiv, in another place it writes Lemalche Madai Uparas, the royalty of Media and Persia. Rashi writes a comment that's hard to understand, but the Turi Evan I think explains it better, which is that sometimes it says Parasu Madai and sometimes it says Madai Uparas. So whenever the Torah does that, often it puts them in one order and then the other order, it's trying to say there is no real order, they're both equal. And Persia and Media are often put together like they were jointly ruling. It's the Persian and Median era. So Amar Rava, Rava says, Atnuye atnu bahadade. They made a tnai, they made a deal with each other. And they said, I minan malchai milachai, if we have the kings, meaning if the kings are Persian, minaychu iparchi, then from you will be you'll be the second in command. And if from you are the kings, minan iparchi, then we'll be the second in command. So it was kind of like a rotating thing. One would be the king and one would be the skan. They would rotate back and forth. Okay, the next verse says that this is verse 4, pasuk dalet in the Megillah. Says Behar Oto et Osher Kivod Malchuto, that Achashverosh wanted to show the wealth and honor of his kingdom, the et yikar, and the value, tif eret gedulato, of the glory of his greatness. So he threw a party for 180 days that was very lavish. The Gemara here quotes the first part of the verse, Behar Oto et Osher Kivod Malchuto, the wealth of the honor of his kingship, but probably the second part of the verse is more important, and the Gemara often does this. It will cite the verse as a placeholder, but not necessarily cite the most important part of the verse. The most important part of the verse is the use of the word tiferet, which means splendor. Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina said, Milamed shelavash bigde kahuna. This teaches us that he wore, that Achashverosh put on himself, the clothing of the high priest. It doesn't say high priest here, but that's what it means. It means he put on the priestly garb, as if to say to himself that he is the high priest, or to put down the high priest of the Jews and to say that he can wear their clothes. Now, the reason that the Gemara makes this drasha is because of the word tiferet. Look, ketiv hacha, it's written here, yakar tiferet gedulat, yakar tiferet gedulato, uchtiv hatam, and it's written there. This is in the book of Exodus, in Shemot, when it talks about the clothing of the Kohanim. It says that the Kohanim, they'll make the clothing for the Kohanim, lechavod, for honor, ulatiferet, and for splendor, that the high priests, the Kohanim in general, should look splendorous. So since it uses that word, we connect the word tiferet to tiferet, and we say that Achashverosh was wearing clothing that made him look splendid, and that was the clothing of the Kohanim. It fits in with a theme of what we were saying, that Achashverosh was waiting until the 70 years were over, and then he could use all of the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash, as if to say, these aren't needed for the Beit HaMikdash anymore. I can use them for my own purposes because I have beaten the Jews. Okay, so it's a sign of victory. Okay, the next verse that we are going to darshan is Pasuk Hei, and it says, Uvimlot hayamim ha'ela, when these days were completed. So this was the 180-day party that Achashverosh threw for the military of Persia and Media. And then after that party was done, he threw a second party that was only 7 days long, to which he invited all of the citizenry of Shushan. So Rav and Shmuel, Rav and Shmuel have a disagreement. Chad amar melech pikei achaya. One of them says that Ahasuerus was a very, very shrewd and smart king. V'chad amar melech tipei sheya. And one of them said he was an idiot king. Manda amar melech pikei achaya. The one, man means who, the one who said that he is a smart king, Shapir avad, says that he did this well. Shapir means good. Shapir, good, avad, he did. The Kariv Rechika Beresha. First, he brought in those who were far away. In other words, the first party he invited his entire kingdom to, and he brought the people from distant provinces into Shushan. Dibne Mataya, because the people of his city, that is the Shushan people that were close to him, Kol Emat Dibai, anytime, Emat means when, so anytime Dibai that he wanted to, Mifais Lahu, he could do nice things for them to win them over, to appease them. They're close by, so it's harder to appease people that are far away. You have to make a whole big event. So he was smart to bring the people from far away first, and then only afterwards he threw a party for the people that were close to him, because he could do that whenever he wanted to. Umanda amar tipeshaya, and the one who said that he was an idiot, de ibaile li krove b'nei mataya beresha, he ought to have done it in reverse. He should have thrown the party for the people of Shushan first. De imardube, because if the people of the capital city were to revolt against him, Hanach Hane Havu Kayame Bahade, they're close by to him. If they revolted against him, he is, 100 feet from the starving masses. So he should have appeased the people close by first and only then thrown a party for the more far-flung provinces. I'm not sure what the relevance of this or what we're supposed to learn from it is, but that is the machloket between Rav and Shmuel. Now, because we started talking about the party, we're talking about the parties, we include now this very famous section. Sha'alu Talmidav et Rashbi. The students of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, that's Rashbi, the students asked him, Mipnei ma, why, or because of what, Nitchaivu Sonehen Shal Yisrael Sheba'oto Hador Klaya. Why did the Jewish people deserve to be destroyed in the Purim story? Now, just interesting here that, and this is a common euphemism that's used in the Gemara, when it refers to the Jewish people, it calls them Sonehen Shel Yisrael. Instead of saying, why did the Jewish people deserve to die, it says, why did the enemies of the Jewish people? And it's a kind of a euphemism. You don't want to, write it in black and white that the Jewish people are going to die, so you write the enemies of the Jews, but we know that you're actually referring to the Jews themselves. The other way to say it, which I kind of do, and I don't know if it's a joke or the truth, is that we are our own worst enemies. So when we call it the enemies of the Jews, we really mean ourselves. In any case, so mipnei ma, for what reason, nitchaivu sonehen shel Yisrael, were the Jewish people deserving, Sheba'otu Ador, in that generation, klaya, to be destroyed. Well, the Marsha writes, interestingly, that he thinks that this is being darshaned because of the word kelim. It writes in the Megillah, in Pasuk Zayin, Vashkopi Chalei Zahav, they were drinking out of golden vessels, and he thinks that they were darshaning the word kli, vessel, and klaya, destruction. And you'll see why, because we're going to say that the reason is that they were drinking out of those vessels at Ahasuerus' party. Well, what he says to them, he doesn't actually give them an answer first. He says, Amar Lahem, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says to his students, Imruatem, you tell me. So this is, sound pedagogy. Instead of just answering the question, he made the students take ownership over the question. So they thought about it, and Amrulo, they said to him, here's our theory. Mipnei shenenu misudato shel oto harasha, because the Jewish people of Shushan went to Ahasuerus' party and they drank his wine and they ate his non-kosher food, and as we'll see later, they also went there on Shabbos, so they violated Shabbos. So because they went to his feast instead of to their Shabbos meals, and because they ate his food instead of eating kosher food, they were liable for destruction by Hashem. So Amar Lahem, that's the, there's a footnote here that you're supposed to add those words. Amar Lahem, he said back to them, the teacher said back to the students, Imke, so that's a good suggestion. He doesn't say that here, but let's assume. Imkein, if that's true, Shebishushan Yahargu, let Hashem kill the Jews of Shushan. Shebechol haolam kulo al yahargu. But don't kill all the Jews all over Achashverosh's province. Only the Jews of Shushan enjoyed Achashverosh's party. So he rejects their suggestion, even though this is the most famous suggestion, that because the Jews ate at Achashverosh's party, that's why they were supposed to be destroyed. Rashbi rejects that solution. So Amrulo, they said back to the teacher, Emor Ata, okay, you tell us, what's your reason? Amar Lahem, so he says to them, Mipnei shehishtachavu letzelem, because they bowed down to an idol. Now, the story that they're talking about here, according to Rashi, Rashi says, Bimei Nebuchadnezzar, there is a story in the first two chapters of the book of Daniel, in chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar puts up a giant statue that's 60 amos high, and he says, everyone has to come bow down to my statue, and if you don't bow down, I'll throw you into the furnace, you'll be burned alive. However, Daniel, Mishael, Hananiah, and Azariah, these four young boys who were serving in Nebuchadnezzar's court, who he loved, they declined to bow down to the statue. But all the other Jewish people in Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom, they did bow down to the statue. Now, bowing down to the statue is either a problem of Avodah Zarah, that it's idol worship, or perhaps it wasn't really idol worship. They were only doing it to appease the king, not to worship an idol. And even if Nebuchadnezzar thought he was a god, but at a time when the Jewish people were under threat, perhaps they needed to, step up and do the right thing and stand up for their principles, and they didn't. The major problem with this theory is that that happened a generation or two generations before this. This generation did not bow down to Nebuchadnezzar's idol. This generation is already 70 years later. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beit HaMikdash in Jerusalem, and these people are living in exile under Achashverosh. So why would they be held responsible for bowing down to the idol? So it could be that the tzelem that they're talking about is the image that was that Haman, according to the Midrash, put on his chest, and that they shouldn't have bowed down to Haman or to his image, and that's a possibility. Another possibility is that they didn't learn from their mistakes. If you look in the first chapter of Daniel, you'll see that one of the things that Daniel, Mishael, Hananiah, and Azariah don't do when they're taken into the king's household is they refuse to eat his food and drink his wine. So we come back full circle to the idea of the party. Those four, just like Mordechai after him, they were careful not to eat and drink with the king and to celebrate with him and not to bow down to his idol. And now it's a generation later, and Mordechai is the same as Daniel, but all the other Jews have not learned their lesson from the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and they are still fawning and preening over the king, and they're fawning over Achashverosh, who's just a cheap knockoff, as we mentioned in an earlier recording, of Nebuchadnezzar, and they haven't learned their lesson. So maybe what he's saying is they had to learn their lesson before Hashem could redeem them. In any case, many questions to be asked here still. Amrulo, but they said back to him, V'chi maso panim yesh badavar? Can they therefore then be forgiven? Amar lahem, he said to them, yes, it's not a problem, meaning it's such a serious transgression, how could they have survived? Meaning, why didn't Hashem destroy them? Amar lahem, he said to them, heim lo asu ela lifnim. They only did it, sort of, seemingly. They didn't really bow down to the idol. They only they bowed down to it, but they didn't really mean it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu also didn't really intend to destroy them. He only made it look like he was going to destroy them. Hainu dichtiv, as it's written in Echa, ki lo ina mi libo. It's not the desire of his heart to destroy the Jewish people. This is very interesting. According to this teaching, the Jewish people were never actually in danger during the period of the Megillah, meaning even though Esther fasted for 3 days and she had to go to Achashverosh, and Mordechai told her, if you don't step up, the Jewish people will have to be saved from some other source, and they had to daven. All these things made it sound like there was some real drama, but according to this, all Hashem ever wanted to do was to scare the Jewish people, not to destroy them. It was not as if they were really going to be destroyed. And that's an interesting point and something worth further discussion. We're going to stop here. We're actually going to end up doing three recordings on this Amud, and we'll finish the Amud in the next recording. Have a wonderful day.